It's really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
What's interesting about the baby boomers is that they've never met a debt they didn't like.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is Thanksgiving week in the Allstate Skyline Studio. I'm Steve Bertrand. The folks from Chicago Inno are here. We'll talk to Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis in just a second. Elise Glink will be along in the second half hour, of course, from thinklink.com. And we're going to have a communications expert. David Hyatt wrote a book about corporate communications that he says can work with your family as well. So what we're going to work on are different ways to say, I didn't vote that way and I don't want to talk about it. So you can use that and bring that to your Thanksgiving table. That's what's coming up on the Wintrust. Speaking of Thanksgiving table, Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis are here from Chicago Inno. Welcome to both.
Hey, Steve.
Hey, Steve.
Catherine, you can take your coat off.
Still cold from that Bears game last night. Sorry.
Catherine went to the Bears game. We won't say which team she was cheering for. And it was a little chilly for you, huh?
It was windy.
That's no kidding.
Cold.
If you could see her, she's got a winter coat on and just a couple of scarves wrapped, a hat on her head. Dahlke, he looks comfortable. But anyway, speaking of the Thanksgiving Day table, we're all about farm to table, locally produced, locally grown. And now Cargill, a big, huge food company, is pushing and talking about how you can actually track your turkey.
Yeah, that's right. So they're working with turkey brand Honeysuckle White. And basically, they're using the blockchain technology to help you track your turkeys. So if you're already rolling your eyes at blockchain and turkey,
say, please, yeah.
Hang in there. Basically, what this is kind of a gimmicky sort of news. But what it is really bringing kind of transparency to the supply chain, right? So kind of knowing exactly where your food's coming from. We talk about farm to table all the time. This is really giving you kind of a look at exactly the route that your turkey took.
What does that mean, blockchain technology?
So the blockchain is a new piece of technology that's come within the last 10 years or so, and it's really gained a lot of attention and popularity around cryptocurrency. So basically, it's the underlying technology that powers Bitcoin and a lot of these sort of digital currencies. And so basically what it is, to kind of strip it down at its base level, it is a distributed ledger. So it is a very traceable, secure transaction showing you exactly where something has traveled among multiple stops. So logistics companies are thinking about it. Lots of different industries are kind of looking at how we can kind of use the blockchain to sort of bring more transparency to different industries.
And so Cargill is doing this. Do they own this Honeysuckle White, or do they distribute it? Or
they're just working with Honeysuckle. I'm not exactly sure the relationship with Cargill.
And what is this a marketing thing then? Where we were going to more likely to buy a turkey. Catherine, would you be more likely to eat a turkey that you had tracked from its farm?
Yeah, I mean, we were kind of joking around earlier. You can now brag at the kitchen or at the dining table, like, oh, do you want to know where my turkey came from?
Right.
But, I think that this is kind of an interesting thing we might see in, other food segments. So, we're going to continue to track where our ingredients come from, where our food comes from, using the blockchain.
And so when you buy this turkey, it's got a code on it or something like that, right? And you enter the code, and then you don't see the actual slaughtering, do you? They don't have slides.
No, they're not going to have any of the slides. So it's one thing that they can show you. One, if you're interested in farm to table, that's one aspect of it. Two, also, if you get sick and you want to check out where the turkey came from, you can yell at the farmer after you get sick on Thanksgiving.
Can we form a community of other people who purchase turkeys at
there
the same farm? All right, so there, that is that. Unfortunately, you will have to travel to Texas to get a Honeysuckle White turkey this year. But they're trying it out, and who knows, maybe they'll bring it north of the Mason-Dixon line one day.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated by Tovala, and I think they were on in the opening bell earlier this week with their, was it this morning? Oh, they were on this morning with the phase two, right? So they've come through with phase two of their oven. It's lighter. Takes up less space. Jim, I know you wrote this story, but I'm just fascinated by this concept. I don't know if it's going to succeed, but I can't stop. Every time I read about them, I'm very curious about them.
Yeah, Tovala is an interesting startup because they're kind of a Silicon Valley company in Chicago, right? It's kind of a futuristic food company that you don't kind of expect to be based in Chicago. But, when they launched, they sort of set out to be the Keurig for food,
right?
Which, again, if you hear Keurig for food, don't roll your eyes too hard yet. But what they're doing is something really interesting. They're creating a new sort of kitchen countertop device and a meal delivery service. So
you buy this device for what, $250 something? something like that?
Yeah.
And it comes to your house, and then you, for $12 a meal, they will send you food that you pop into it. It's got a barcode. It knows just how to cook it. And you've had it, right? It comes out restaurant quality?
Yeah. So basically what the oven does is it does sort of steam in convection heat and broiling at the same time. So it's sort of three different cooking methods. And what it can do is it sort of scans the barcode on the meal, knows exactly how to cook it, accesses it via the cloud. And then in a few minutes, you have the sort of restaurant quality meal right from your countertop oven.
Which would be limiting, Catherine, but they're also expanding their list of recipes, right, that you can put your own food in there?
Yeah, so they're expanding the list of recipes, and so that you can, you know, cook things other than just Tovala meals. It kind of makes it, you know, a better bargain in that way, that you don't always have to buy Tovala meals to use the device. So I think that's, you know, kind of a major selling point now.
It's a big leap, though. I mean, it's not like buying a Keurig where if you don't like it, you've dropped $100. I mean, this is a substantial... I mean, are they offering sort of... I mean, can you rent it for a month? The things I would imagine not.
So they've worked on different programs where they do kind of like lease to own, but they also have a program where you can get the oven for $100 less if you commit to 100 meals over the course of a year. But really what they're doing is really targeting the convenience issue of dinner, right? So they're really making cooking really great, healthy meals as easy as possible.
Keurig is working on a cocktail machine. Is that true, Catherine?
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. They announced that last week.
Like a K cup for coffee, you could they'll give you a what? There's a shot of booze in the plastic or what?
Well, yeah, I'm not exactly sure how the tech works, but it's supposed to be, you know, just like the coffee, a convenient way to get a cocktail really quickly.
Right. I tell the kids to go to the fridge and get me one. That's my convenient way. It's 12:22. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis are in the studio from Chicago Inno. Read what they write at chicagoinno.com, or also listen to the opening bell every day for the Inno Minute, which is at 5:20 each weekday morning. Steve Grzanich hosts that show, and he was talking with Tovala earlier today. Okay, we've talked about Geobit before, and they started with, it's like a tracking device for your kids, right? That's how they first started it. Catherine, you talked about that they've just come into more money. But the idea is you put this device on your kid and then you can't lose them.
Exactly. So John Rinaldi, he's the founder of Geobit. And, you know, he originally got the idea for this device when he lost his own child in Maggie Daly Park. And so, you know, now the wearable GPS tracker, you know, can put it on your kids' clothing and have their location on your phone in an app.
And so they started with that. And then last year they added pets. And
exactly.
I remember when they did that, I thought, well, this people will spend up on their pets.
Right.
Not that they wouldn't on their kids, but it's a little more acceptable. And then business took off, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, their product is sold out and they're trying to ramp up production, get the inventory up. And so to help do that, they just raised $6.5 million from some local investors and then also from California-based Netgear, which is a big, you know, computing service company. And they're also going to help Geobit, you know, give them some of their more corporate resources to help them streamline production and supply chain and marketing.
How many subscribers do they have?
They have nearly 10,000.
So it's what? It's $100 to buy the bit and then $9 a month to
use the tracking service.
And they've got about 10,000 subscribers?
Yep, that's what
I said. Are these mostly dogs and cats or are they kids or are they... you also brought up that it's for elderly parents in a way.
Yeah, so I think most of their subscribers right now are families, people tracking their family members, their kids, their parents, whoever it may be. The pets business is a little smaller right now. They're working to relaunch that with the funding to try to commercialize that some more.
And Jim, you have some theories about what their future might be.
Well, I think it's really neat what they're doing with kids, but I think there's a really interesting sort of B2B enterprise application for this too, right? Like selling to businesses that can really very closely monitor each piece of inventory that they own. They already kind of have some military clients right now, so you're already kind of showing the B2B potential with this, and I think that that's a market that's going to really, really grow for Geobit.
And we talk about putting chips in people and things like that. What is this? What about this technology that's better than just putting a chip on a package or a piece of equipment?
So what this does is interesting. It's a lot better than simply GPS. So it's using both GPS technology and beacon technology. And so what it's able to do is provide a very accurate, detailed location that you'll know, like, if you're down in Lower Wacker Drive, how great GPS can be. So, right. it, you know, when you're looking for your kid, you need something that's going to be able to be a little bit better than just like a typical 3G.
More than the block.
And businesses are going to need to know that too, especially as you're getting down to, you know, which room is this piece of equipment in, right? So I think the precision of their technology is very interesting. Also, they've done some really innovative stuff around battery life. Their battery lasts like for weeks and weeks. So they've really built some pretty interesting tech there.
Well, we're talking about picking up cash, Catherine. You also wrote about ParkWiz, and they've got some money and a partnership with Amazon, right?
Yeah. So ParkWiz is a Chicago-based parking startup. They help people find convenient parking around the city. And they raised $20 million earlier this fall and just added an additional $5 million. And part of that was from Amazon's Alexa Fund.
And the Alexa Fund goes to companies to help them figure out how to work with Alexa.
Basically, yeah. So, you know, with the ParkWiz collaboration, they're developing a feature that's going to allow users to find parking using Alexa on ParkWiz.
So you would sit at home and talk into your device.
Exactly. I need a place to park on near Wacker Drive.
You'd be home planning to go downtown to eat dinner, and you'd get your parking spot while you're practicing your violin on this new app. So you also wrote about this. Who wrote about this one? It was Catherine.
Yeah.
This app where you can teach yourself to play violin as an adult.
Exactly. So the app is called Trolla, and it was actually in the latest cohort of Techstar Chicago, a big accelerator here. And, you know, they claim that their app can teach you how to play the violin, you know, a simple-ish song in about 30 days.
You played the violin, right?
I played the violin growing up, started around like 5 years old, and I don't know how you could learn all that from an app.
I thought I was going to teach myself to play guitar with an app a few years ago. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really overestimated myself. I didn't have it in me. Who's going to do this? What adult's going to learn how to play the violin by app, sitting at home in their apartment or their condo or whatever?
Someone that's got a lot of time. But, you know, it could be interesting. I mean, you know, people want to pick up different hobbies at all different stages of their life. And I think this could be helpful in some ways. I mean, ditching a violin teacher altogether, you know, there's certain things that maybe an app just
can't teach you. He talked about the abuse of violin teachers. Were your violin teachers abusive?
No. Yeah? Not that I remember.
It saves money, though. I mean, it is a lot cheaper than hiring a full-time person to teach you the violin.
And I suppose if you want to test the waters and see, you know, if it's for you. But, yeah, he said that you can learn your first song in 10 minutes or so, I think. I mean, maybe rudimentary song.
In
30 days? I thought there was...
Well, it's probably a little more easy for people who kind of have an aptitude for music. Maybe you've learned a previous instrument, now you're trying a new one.
So, like, for Catherine, if she wanted to... Actually, Catherine, you know, let's do a Christmas show next week. Bring your violin in, and you can play some songs for us. Okay, it's set. You think that's a good idea?
Done. Jim? I like it.
All right. Thanks for coming by.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Domati. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. All right, do you ever leave a meeting with your boss and just know when you walk out the door that you didn't make your point, or she didn't understand what you were trying to say, or maybe it happens with your family or friends? Maybe you need to work a little bit on your communication, or at least know a little bit, be a little more aware of what's involved in communication. David Hyatt is a corporate trainer. He's got a book out called From the Boardroom to the Living Room, and he joins us on a phone line now. David, welcome to the Biz Lunch.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate you being here.
All right, so let's start with, people are going to be sitting around the Thanksgiving table with a lot of people who maybe they only see once or twice a year. Communication is key there. How much of corporate communication is the same or similar to personal communication? Are they the same thing, or are they very different?
Well, you know, I think the concepts are the same, Steve, and I think the some of the tactics would be the same, but of course how you use them would all be contextual, especially around that Thanksgiving table. Because, as you know, some of your office aren't going to exactly agree with you.
Right.
And very often it can lead to, you know, touchy feelings and people getting their feelings hurt, that kind of thing.
Maybe when it comes to Thanksgiving, we should just focus on suppressing our views and just get through the meal and not worry about anything like that.
Well, I got to tell you, one of the key points in the book is, you know, basically, you got to give up your need to be right sometimes.
Explain
just
that
to have a good conversation.
And yeah, because you talk about being self-aware and having an idea that you don't know everything, or if you present a conversation as if you do know everything, you're going to lose that conversation.
Well, typically, again, my goal for the book was to have more positive outcomes in conversations, not to go into the I'm right, you're wrong kind of mode. So I urge people to stay open-minded, that we all have our own beliefs, our own systems, things that we believe to be true, whether they really are or not. And very often, there's interesting ways that we've achieved those. And if you're really trying to understand someone, you know, arguing with them really isn't going to get it done very much.
You talk about
open-minded to... Yeah,
I was going to say, you talk about the importance. You talk about the importance of questions and different sorts of categories of questions, knowing when to ask which when.
Yep. And I think that's key, because if we want to stay in an adult mode, right? If you acknowledge the opinion of others, doesn't necessarily mean that you have to accept their opinion. Mm-hmm. But if you can acknowledge it, let them talk it through, very often they feel heard. At that point, they're going to be much more apt to at least engage in a little bit more civil conversation. Yep. Now, part of the book, though, see if I got to go ahead.
No, you go ahead. I'm sorry.
Don't mean to. Yeah, you know, the book wasn't written for the banter types of conversation. I know in my family, we have a lot of that kidding, bantering, going back and forth. So it was more designed for those important conversations where you really wanted to accomplish an outcome, you know, some kind of meaningful resolution to a problem, that kind of thing.
You suggest then that people sort of, you know, athletes will play a game in their mind before the game actually starts. Does that work with conversation, business conversation as well?
Well, I think, you know, you should have an outcome in mind. I always recommend, I laugh and I say, you know, to have a civilized dinner, we have to put the food on the plate. And it's really true for a civilized conversation. We've got to get the purpose of that meeting on the plate up front. Mm-hmm. So, you know, plate is a little acronym to mean the purpose, the amount of time we're going to take for it, limit the time. The A would be for their agenda of expectations, what they hope to accomplish. T would be for your topics you want to cover. And then E, the eventual goal. You got to have that goal. What are you really striving for in this communication?
We talk a lot on this show, too, about the notion, I think you were getting close to it or talking about it earlier, too, about this idea of active listening. And maybe that involves questions as well. But you need to be involved in what the other person is saying and show them that so that they sort of buy into then when you're talking.
You know, it's really key that people feel that they're heard and understood. That's one of the key things if you're going to really connect with people. If they're feeling that you're really listening, connecting with them. Part of the problem is our faces. Our faces will tend to give away things that we don't mean to. We all know the power of facial expressions, right? Your actions speak louder than your words. So I could say yes with a frown, and they know I mean no.
Right.
And what happens is if we're not listening with our eyes as well as our ears, we could get into trouble.
So then tell me about about the difference in communicating face-to-face versus email. Because, right, so much of the face-to-face conversation is physical. I think, in fact, I saw in one of your articles that only 7% of the words have 7% impact. 93% is physical. So you have to adapt, I would imagine, then when you're communicating via email and write in a different way than you might speak.
You know, and a great example is just in our little interview here, the couple times I've interrupted you and because I couldn't see your face. Right. I didn't see that you were ready to say something else. Therefore, really paying attention to the tonality of the person involved and the words they're using become vital on a telephone. Now, when you get to email, you don't have the advantage of either of those, Steve. Right. And I don't care how many happy faces you put on email, it's not the same.
It's my experience too that people will read an email however they want to, but they often read it in the most negative way, or they bring with it a negative connotation.
You know, and I just had that experience 2 weeks ago. Sent a very acknowledging email that I thought was very simple, very easy, and I get a response back. They thought I was upset with them.
Right, right.
When it's just, I guess, because it was a quick email or something, and okay. you know, didn't think it through. It's just a simple response.
David Hyatt is an author. The name of the book, The Boardroom to the Living Room, Communicating from the Boardroom to the Living Room. Thanks for joining us today. Have a great Thanksgiving, Dave. I appreciate it.
You too, Steve. Thanks so much for having me on.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. You know that old saying, old habits die hard? I think that's appropriate for how Sears is wrapping up their story. The old school retailer is working hard to try and sell all they can during this holiday season. The Hoffman Estates-based retailer secured a $350 million loan to keep a handful of stores open and make a last-ditch effort for the holiday rush. You might think to yourself, who in the world would lend all of that money to a bankrupt company? Well, it comes from Great American Capital Partners. And they're doing it because they're charging an arm and a leg for interest rates and additional closing fees. But at the end of the day, this very well could be the last season Sears could be selling their essentials. And speaking of essentials, is your car insurance up to date? Well, if you need a new policy, insurers are fighting tooth and nail to get your business. And as of recently, Allstate is inching out Geico. Northbrook-based Allstate reported 2% growth last year, beating out their overall pace of the last 5 years. And remember, when companies compete, consumers usually win. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust Chicago's Bank on 720 WGN. On the phone line now is Elise Glink. Of course, she is the force behind ThinkLink.com, the CEO of Best Money Moves, which is an HR app which helps people dealing with financial stress, which they will be doing on January 5th, and helps their employers sort of recognize that and dial it down. Elise, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Oh, thanks, Steve. Okay. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you. Here's my deal. I try to be a spendthrift for 11 months of the year. I'm cheap. I don't like to buy things. I like it even less when my family buys things. And then when Black Friday comes around, baby, I just let loose. I buy stuff just for the sake of buying it. And
really?
I don't know what it is, but I love it. I just love it.
So I just have to understand, are you a 4 a.m. knock down the doors at Walmart sort of a Black Friday shopper, or do you wait until that first wave has gone in so your physical safety isn't threatened?
I'm now that I'm getting older, I'm sleeping in, but no, I never was one who got up really early. But you know what happened really, Elise, was we would go down, Sharon and I would stay with my parents over Thanksgiving or the Christmas when the kids were younger, and so it was kind of a way for us to have some time. You know, the kids would stay with my parents and we'd go shopping on the morning after Thanksgiving, things like that. So I do enjoy it. And I do end up buying things a lot for myself, like sweaters or clothes or things that I maybe don't really need. And I could see how that could get people in trouble.
It does get people in trouble, but what's really interesting about the way that Black Friday has evolved, which is that there may be other deals that are available earlier this week that are better than you're going to find actually on Thanksgiving Day or the day after Thanksgiving. And certainly when we get around to Cyber Monday, which is a week from today, there are all sorts of deals that are online, available only online, that aren't available in stores at all. And so when you start to compare what you can buy, you know, on Black Friday versus other times of the year, even moving towards Christmas, one of the things I talked about in this week's newsletter was that you really have to think about what you're buying, what you want to buy, what is the best thing to buy at what point in time, and then take a look at what's going on in terms of where you buy it, because something that you might normally think to buy from Amazon might actually have a better deal if you buy it from GameStop.
You know, I learned that last night. In fact, I was buying something online, and it was a gift that I had been presented with an Instagram ad. I'm like, oh, that looks pretty good. So I clicked on it and saw the price, and I thought, well, I'll just go check on Amazon. And I found, you know, 4 or 5 different vendors of the exact same product that were selling it, you know, for 10, 20, in one case, 30% less.
Yeah, it's really important to shop online, and of course, you know, the internet makes that so easy now. But for example, you know, Amazon is offering, and I don't mean to pick on Amazon because there's some things that you can only buy at Amazon, and you do get a great deal. But if you, for example, are looking for a Fire 7 Kid Edition tablet, Amazon is discounting it to $69.99, and so you save $30, and you might think, hey, that's a really good deal. But Kohl's is actually matching that deal and is giving you $15 of Kohl's cash. It's a better deal. And so with
I'm
going to
buy one of those. I'm going to get one.
Well, it's just one of those different things. But by shopping around and these deals are now all widely, you know, advertised ahead of time, it really gives you a sense of how to plan your shopping dollars.
Do you think
that's what we want you to do?
Do you think that Black Friday is going to go away?
I don't think it's going to go away, but I certainly think that what's happened is that as the internet continues to get more personalized, the ads, you know, get more personalized, there are more places that they're worming their way into, right? We didn't used to have Instagram, and now you're clicking on Instagram ads. So there's definitely new ways to get the information across. I still think that the old adage of shop around and decide if you really need to spend that money is the best way to avoid a post-Christmas financial headache.
I was talking to my wife, Sharon, earlier this week. I'm like, what sort of unnecessary, useless kitchen gadget do you think I'm going to buy this year? Because there's usually something like that. Okay, so obviously stay within your budget, look for the deals, and just don't go crazy, right?
Don't go crazy. You know, between Thanksgiving and Cyber Monday, U.S. consumers are going to spend well over $20 billion.
Wow.
And that is a huge amount of money, and it's really a big chunk of what is going to be spent for the entire holiday season this year. And
you know,
just remember that January 1st is going to come, and all this stuff is going to get marked down another 40%.
The other thing is, we had Adobe Analytics on a few weeks ago, and they talked about the fact that, you know, there's an extra, I think it's one extra day for the shopping season because Thanksgiving's a little early. And they said that extra day is going to be, I want to say it was like $220 million in extra sales for the retail industry, which just shows us that we're buying things that we don't necessarily need. The more time we have to buy, the more money we're spending.
Yeah. Other than a leap year, it seems to me that they're exactly the same number of days every year in November and December leading
right
up to Christmas.
But when Thanksgiving's earlier, the season starts a little earlier, yeah.
It does, and if you look around my neighborhood, all the Christmas lights are already up. Now, wasn't there some rule that you had to wait until after Thanksgiving for that?
I almost put mine up this weekend. You don't turn them on. You put them up. That's the key.
No, they're on. They're on, Steve. You're late to the game.
So listen, you guys, check out thinklink.com because I was reading Lisa's newsletter this morning, and it was about Black Friday, and that's something that all of you can subscribe to and follow. Elise, have a happy Thanksgiving, and we'll talk to you a little bit later in the month.
Sounds good, Steve. You too.